joke is on me. Well, I have no opinion about that, and I have no opinion about me. Somebody could walk into this room and say your life is on fire. It's all over the evening news, all about the fire in your life on the evening news. I don't want no part of this crazy love. I don't want no part of your love. I don't want no part of this crazy love. I don't want no part of your love. This'll eat up a year of my life, and then there's all of that weight to be lost. She says the joke is on me. I say the joke is on me. I said I have no opinion about that. Well, we'll just have to wait and call.
That was Paul Simon with Crazy Love off the album Graceland. Fabulous album. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to it. It's good traveling music. Before that was Weezer with Knockdown Dragout. Before that was Muddy Waters with Manish Boy. That is the third time we've played Manish Boy in three shows. Such a good song. So happy that I played it. And before that was, of course, Richard Burton with Camelot. My favorite song from musical ever. Anyway. What do we got planned? Nothing. Just on the spot here. Haley's in the next room working on an essay. And wait, I think my guest might have arrived soon. No, my guest is not arriving yet. We're just gonna have to wait. Gonna have to play some more music. Sad, sad. Here we go.
Thank you. southern boy on his own. She looked at him with those soft eyes so innocent and blue. He knew right then he was too far from home.
And we're back.
Yes, we are.
With my guest, my sister, Jessica.
Hello.
I just was on Facebook and I saw this article, this Atlantic article that is about Rob Reiner. And I kind of want to read it, but also not at all.
What is it?
I don't
pertaining
know.
Pertaining to what?
I don't know. I think it's just, it didn't even say Rob Reiner. It's oh, it does. The title of the article is All in the Family Name. Subtitle, Director Rob Reiner Reflects on the Legacy of His Father. I don't know who Rob Reiner's father is.
I definitely think we should know, but I don't know either.
I don't know why I would know. Hold on.
I mean, obviously he's
Rob
a Reiner.
Reiner. Yeah.
Mr. Reiner.
I mean, here's the thing. He's got like a couple movies that I love, and then the rest of them I'm just like, okay, Rob Reiner.
What do you love? What are your favorite
When
Rob?
Harry Met Sally.
Yeah. You kind of can't.
Did he do... What's the other movie that I think I love? Oh, come on. Okay, now I'm looking at Rob Reiner's filmography. I don't really care for The Wolf of Wall Street. I don't really care for LBJ. Princess Bride, that's the other one. Thanks,
thank
Haley.
You.
Yeah, I can't think. I don't really like Spinal Tap. I don't really like...
I like Spinal Tap. Spinal Tap, I think, was the first rated R movie I watched with our parents' permission.
That's probably true for me, too, because I remember watching it very young, but I didn't absorb any of it, and I don't know. I've watched it since, and I'm like, okay.
But, like,
dry.
The tiny little Stonehenge.
The tiny little Stonehenge is funny, but it's very... it's just because I watched it before I kind of grew an appreciation for British comedy, but it's very dry.
But
Rob Reiner's not British.
Fran Drescher.
Fran Drescher's in Spinal Tap?
She is. She's Bobby Fleckman.
I did not know Fran Drescher's in Spinal
Tap. She's their publicist. Dad will text us in a second.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm certain he already did. No, that was Mom.
No.
That was Mom.
But, yeah, Fran Drescher's in it. And Fran Drescher's Spinal Tap character makes an appearance later on in The Nanny, which is hilarious. They have a scene together, The Nanny and Bobby Fleckman.
So, interesting that you say these... You mentioned these weird crossovers between... properties.
Yes.
Because so in Avengers Infinity War, which I haven't seen yet, and I've already ranted that I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either, nor do I have any interest in.
So that's crazy. But
sorry.
I mean, I'm a little sick too, as I said earlier. But anyway, in Avengers Infinity War, there's a cameo by Dr. Tobias Funke from Arrested Development.
Is there really?
Yeah, well, because the Russo brothers directed the pilot to Arrested Development.
Oh.
So they like, when they directed the last Captain America movie, they had the Bluth stair car in the background in one shot. Like, they love Arrested Development. But, so Tobias is in there as, like, an exhibit in an alien zoo. So because of that, people started drawing connections to other properties that are also in universe, technically.
Okay.
So Avengers Infinity War, the extent of this is in the same universe as the Adam West Batman movie. By just drawing, it's like a Kevin Bacon degrees of separation thing.
Sure.
Yeah. And it's a long chain. It's like 20 movies.
So it's not Kevin Bacon, because that would be just 9 degrees. 8 degrees. 8 degrees?
It's 6 degrees.
6 degrees.
But like it's the same, like it's the same principle of like just connecting to from movie to movie to movie to movie to movie to movie. Also, Rob Reiner directed The American President, which is awesome.
I still haven't seen it.
It's weird that you haven't seen it, because it's so good.
I know. It's totally a movie that I would enjoy, but I have not gotten to it.
It's very obvious that... Actually, I'm not sure if The West Wing or The American President... Which one is more realistic? I'm not sure.
Possibly neither.
Well, I think one of them is definitely more realistic. I mean, in terms of like how the White House works, mm-hmm. and like who makes what decisions and like what it's like for the staff, I don't know which one is more real. I think it might be The American President, honestly, because there's a lot more like there are a lot more staffers that have like big jobs as opposed to The West Wing, where it's like the big jobs are done by like 5 people. And then everyone else is just kind of an underling.
Right. That makes sense. In terms of... I'm going to segue off this for a second.
Yeah.
Realism and, like, Aaron Sorkin.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of comparisons people make to Aaron Sorkin's writing to Amy Sherman-Palladino, who wrote Gilmore Girls and The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and Bunheads, which is underappreciated. There's been a lot of talk about how they write very similarly because they're both very pop culture-y. Their dialogue's very quick. I would argue that Amy Sherman-Palladino's writing is less realistic and much more heightened than even Aaron Sorkin's is. But I'm curious, do you think, like, there's an element of... I don't know the word I'm looking for, but do you consider it to be very realistic in terms of the way he writes?
I mean... I'm not even necessarily talking so much writing style as I'm talking about how you craft a narrative out of something as complex. Like the West Wing is a simplification of what it's like to work in the White House, right? Like I think it's right in the tone. Mm-hmm. Like it captures the tone really well of what it's like to work in like such a busy and like high pressure and like high power environment. But it does that in sort of in an equivocated way where each character kind of stands in for like many characters, you know?
Well, so then look at The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel then in terms of the way it looks at stand-up comedy, because I think it's the same sort of thing where, and I think people write off Amy Sherman-Palladino shows, and this is the point I'm getting at, because yes, that's a simplification of how stand-up comedy worked in the 1950s. Right, because it's about telling the story and not necessarily the job.
Yeah.
I think The West Wing does the same thing, too, but I think they inherently take Aaron Sorkin's writing as more fact-based because...
Because he's a dude?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah. I think that's, like, totally fair. There's a little... I think that Amy Sherman-Palladino has a little more flourish in her
Maybe.
Writing. Maybe. You know? It definitely tries to be a little more fantastical, I think, than West Wing does. Or any Aaron Sorkin thing. Although, it's also hard to separate all of these from the director sometimes, right? Because Steve Jobs is a very, very surreal movie. You know, I would say that's more surreal than most stuff.
I don't know if I saw Steve Jobs.
You really should. Do you know much about it?
No, I don't, I guess. I feel like I read a lot about it at the time, but I don't remember.
So it kind of does the... it sort of tries to do Birdman, but three times, where it's...
Sorry.
It's 3 days in his life and that's it. Like it's 3 days and it's almost done entirely through long shots. I think there are a lot of cuts, but it definitely tries to capture the feel of just Steve Jobs is walking around yelling at people. Like when he's like, I think the days are the launch of the Mac, the launch of the Next Cube, which is after he was ousted from Apple and he was working for Next.
I don't even know what that is.
It was a company later led to Pixar. Weird.
Okay.
I used to be really good on that. But then the third one is the launch of the iPod. And it's just those 3 days in his life. So you get like a good span of like 15 years-ish, mm-hmm. 16, 17 years of just how he changes a person. It's very weird. It's very surreal, especially with the directing. I mean, it's Danny Boyle, right? So.
Oh, I didn't realize Danny Boyle directed that. That's an interesting team up of artists.
It works really well.
That's very interesting. I didn't see that.
It got panned, but...
Well, and that also came right after the other Steve Jobs movie with Ashton Kutcher, which I think we saw as a family.
We did.
Yeah.
It wasn't right after. I think there was like a year or so in between, maybe a year and a half.
That's still not a lot of time.
Yeah. It's also much better because iJobs to me just seemed like your standard biopic that really didn't accomplish much.
Right.
I don't really like biopics as a medium. I think... Aaron Sorkin, Steve Jobs is like the most interesting thing that's come close to that.
Didn't you really like Theory of Everything, though?
No, I never saw Theory of Everything.
Really?
Yeah. And I've also never really been much of a fan of Stephen Hawking.
No.
So, not even as a physicist, just like, I don't really like when people...
I mean, R.I.P. Stephen Hawking.
Oh, I mean, yeah, sure. Like, yeah, great. Big contributions to the field. Great. I just think it's weird when, like... some people become celebrities for like being smart, yet no one really understands how they're smart. You know, that's kind of a weird thing about like Neil deGrasse Tyson, right? Like I'm a little bothered by Neil deGrasse Tyson's like celebrity.
Why?
I don't know. It's just interesting to me. In the same way that I'm kind of like okay with Bill Nye.
Don't you have tickets to go see Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Do I?
You do.
Well, it'd be cool. I'm not, I don't hate him.
Okay.
I don't hate him. I'm just like, you know, he's a little capital S science, you know? Have you ever seen these fake tweets by him?
You've read them to me.
They're
often.
So good. Like, my favorite is, if the moon really did hit your eye, like a big pizza pie, you'd be killed instantly. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
So you don't like the like pop science-ness about it?
Yeah, sort of.
But isn't it good to introduce people to science?
Yeah, it is. I think it also can sometimes lead to like a weird level of abstraction where people are just like, oh, these people are the scientists and they do the science and he's making a joke. I don't know. I should formulate this into better words at some point.
At some point I would like to talk about this further because it is interesting as somebody who pursues science in a scientific way.
Yeah, I mean, but like I also want to be that, right? Because I don't want to do lab work. I want to be a science celebrity.
You want to be a TV star.
I want to be the next Neil deGrasse Tyson. Yeah.
Yeah.
I stutter so much sometimes on the radio whenever I'm.
I don't think you're stuttering. I think we're both just thinking. We didn't really plan out what we were doing today.
I did a class presentation on Monday, and got some feedback that I think you might find mildly interesting from my professor. I'm not going to read the whole thing because I did it with a partner, and I don't want to read the overview of our presentation, but I will say the part about my speech pattern is very interesting.
Okay.
Zach spoke clearly and with a lot of animation, made great eye contact with the class, and conveyed enthusiasm.
Aww.
You seemed like you were having fun, and that makes a big difference. But you do say, right, an awful lot. We all have our verbal tics, but that one was really noticeable.
Well, it's hard because that's like an actual word.
Yeah.
If it's just you can kind of forgive it because your brain has trained to tune it out.
Or like.
I say like a lot.
You know,
and okay.
What's interesting is I don't think I said right for a long time. But then when I went to San Francisco to visit Ben, my godfather, to the readers at home, he says that a lot. And so I was just like, well, I'm going to pick this up. I like it. Because it's kind of inquisitive, right?
Right.
You know, you're making a statement and then you're kind of asking them, I guess you're not really asking them what they think about it, but it's a way to kind of bring people into the conversation. It's a way of subtly saying, join my conversation. You know, I want to hear your opinion instead of just like getting up there and talking, which granted in a lecture style setting probably isn't the best thing to do, but it was also a difficult topic. And I genuinely wanted to try to figure out if they like got it.
Yeah.
I was like, right, right. Right?
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I like that they talked about how you were so enthusiastic.
Yeah, that's nice. I tried very hard. I was joking. I was like up in front of the class before we started, and I was just like joking around with people. I felt I was working the crowd. It was very good. There were only 12 people in the crowd, but or 11.
Hey, any crowd. I have a crowd I teach every Wednesdays of 4 students, so.
That's fun.
It's okay.
How old are these students?
We have 2 fourth graders and 1 third grader. And yesterday we just added our 4th member, who's a 2nd grader.
Ooh.
Very scandalous, because the week before, the director of this program that I teach at, she came in and she was like, you're going to have a new addition. She's a 2nd grader. And as soon as she closed the door, the 3rd grader turned to me and went, a 2nd grader? We can't have a 2nd grader. And the 4th graders were like, you were in 2nd grade last year.
That's a really good voice, by the way. That was a good young child voice.
Thank you.
I was talking about this with a friend of mine earlier, how like when I was in 1st grade, I thought 5th graders were like very old, and I would like look at them, and I suppose it's because like there's a genuine height difference between a 5th grader and a 1st grader.
Unless you're
but
me.
I would actually like look up at them and be like, wow, look at this like adult human.
I mean, there's also like
and
big
they're 10 years old.
Developmental stages that happen in between those grades too. Not motor skills,
yeah.
But like you just change because you're learning more. You can read. You can. There's so much going on in those like early years that it really does make a big difference, like a year or two.
Yeah, it's strange because I think about 5th graders and I'm like, oh, these are small little baby children, but then I'm also like, well, in 5th grade I was like reading Harry Potter, like that's actually like mildly intellectually rigorous, you know, and. Like, but like I look at 5th graders and I'm like, oh, they're so tiny. They can't do anything.
Sometimes when I'm teaching a group of 5th graders, they act older to me than like groups of like freshmen in high school. I'm like, oh yeah, these kids are on my level. And maybe that's because I watch a lot of Disney Channel. But, you know, I can connect with a 9 or 10 year old a lot quicker. And they are a little more receptive to me sometimes than even like a high schooler, because they're just all off. Again, it's different stages of life when you're going through different things and your body's making changes.
Yeah, not to get like too psychoanalytic about this, but do you think that's like, because middle schoolers and early high schoolers kind of have that development of like a superego, Whereas,
yes.
Whereas like elementary school kids, you can just kind of, you can tune into their instincts pretty easily because they're not going to try to hide what they actually want, you know?
I think, too, like, if you're 9 or 10, you kind of think you're grown up, especially if you're already with, like, younger kids. Mm-hmm. So you connect to a teacher figure more.
Mm.
If you're in high school, especially if you're around a lot of your own peers, you don't really need to connect with that teacher figure. Especially if the teacher figure, like, let's be honest, is 4'10 and a half. And, you know, you're already taller than them. And
there are not people that are already taller than you, are there?
In high school, yes.
Oh, in high school, okay.
No, in fifth grade, some of them are like up to my shoulders.
Okay.
Which is...
That's not crazy.
No.
Air conditioner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Do you want to play a song?
I would love to play a song.
Okay. Well, I'm not saying would you like to choose the song. Oh. I mean, like, generally...
I never get to choose the music when I'm on here.
Nope. Although I think you'll like pretty much all these.
I did like Hollywood Nights.
So this one is in honor of... the SpongeBob SquarePants musical.
Yay!
Getting so many Tony nominations.
I didn't actually look at the Tony nominations
12.
Yet. That's amazing!
Frozen got 3.
Yeah, Frozen was a major snub, they said.
Cursed Child got 9.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
And, like, the SpongeBob SquarePants musical is 12.
That's really...
It's, like, it's literally nominated for, like, everything that you could possibly imagine.
It looks like... I have to... While you're pulling this up, I'm going to say the SpongeBob SquarePants musical looks like an impeccably designed show. I very much would like to see it. It is high on my list, and I hear the tickets are wicked cheap.
I really want to see it at some point.
We should just go in for a day and see it.
Yeah, oh, I hate going to New York for a day, but yeah. Come on, give me the list.
Okay, I'm going to keep talking about SpongeBob SquarePants. I had a friend who is a projection designer. Professionally, and he went to New York for a day. He lives in Maryland right now. He went for New York for a day to just go see a bunch of shows with people, and they were trying to get cheap tickets, so they would go to the box office and be like, hey, do you have any tickets for X show? They get up to SpongeBob, and they're like, yeah, we have tickets available. Do you want first row balcony? And they were like, well, how much are they? And they were like, $60. And him and his friend were like, $60 a piece. Okay, that's fine. And the woman was like, no, $60 for both of them. They were like $30 tickets. It was very exciting. And he said he really, really enjoyed it. And he has very critical taste. So if my friend Paul liked it, then I think it is worth seeing.
I mean, here's the thing, right? Is I think it looks beautiful, right?
Does.
It looks
gorgeous.
Fabulous. And the songs that I like in the show make me cry because they're so good.
I haven't listened to it yet, except for that first song, which I hope is the one you're playing, because I do really like it.
It is the one I'm going to play, because it's the best one, and it even that one is like gut-wrenching to me. But I don't really like a lot of the other songs on the album. I like half of them.
Well, that's the thing when you have a situation where there are a lot of songwriters making music, it kind of is touch and go. Can I ask, are you playing the original Broadway cast or are you playing the pre-Broadway Chicago run?
I don't think the Broadway cast is available, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. I'm a little out of the loop right now, so I didn't really know.
SpongeBob, SquarePants. I mean, I think because it's mostly the same.
Yeah, except for Wes Taylor is playing Plankton now on Broadway. He's very great.
Yeah, there's only one album as of right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I wish they had just hired Jonathan Coulton to do the whole thing, because he wrote the first song and it's amazing.
And it really captures the tone that they're going for in the show.
100%.
But Cyndi Lauper wrote one, though. That's cool.
Yeah, I have no idea which one Cyndi Lauper wrote.
Okay. I don't either.
I like the pirate one. I like a lot of them. But I don't like other ones. Like, the David Bowie one is, unfortunately... It's not even that it's a bad song. It's just very juxtaposed.
David Bowie, Lazarus, fun fact.
Yeah, please.
The girl in the West End production of Lazarus right now, which they're talking about finally moving to Broadway.
That'd be fun.
Played Brigitte in The Sound of Music Live in 2013, 12 or 13.
I've seen Sound of Music once. That basically means nothing to me. I don't really like Sound of Music.
I don't really like Sound of Music either, but I was so obsessed with Sound of Music Live as the first like televised live Broadway show in this trend of shows that I every once in a while follow all the kids who played the Von Trapp kids on Twitter and like, I'm like, what are they up to? And this one is in Lazarus now, which is pretty cool and also makes me feel old because she was just a child.
That's what happens.
Now she's an adult
lady. They sprout up. All right, here is a song.
who inhabit it. Jump out of bed, mix up a breakfast for my favorite pet snail. Full steam ahead, the SS I am ready is about to set sail. This cat of day couldn't get much better, but it keeps on trying. I'm on my way, somewhere there's a Krabby Patty that needs frying. And who's the lucky sponge in the mirror who is living his dream? Who's always extra careful with his dental hygiene? Gary, it's me, happy just to be here in the world renowned Bikini Bottom, how I love this town. Bikini Bottom, when the sun shines down on a beautiful Bikini Bottom day. Good morning, Patrick.
Is it morning already?
It sure is, and I'm singing an opening number.
Ooh, I want a verse. I missed a snack. This busy schedule makes it hard to be me. To stay on track, now I'll have to eat it while I'm watching TV. There might not be time for a nap, but I'll do what I can. They're showing all the episodes of Mermaid Man. Oh, every single one. I'm spending all day underneath my favorite rock.
Bikini Bottom.
Now it rhymes with rock.
Bikini Bottom.
Nothing rhymes with rock. It's a typical Bikini Bottom day.
Would you two please keep it down?
Good morning, Squidward.
Another day, another migraine.
When I want some quiet, there's nowhere to go.
A sensitive artiste can't get a moment's peace with these two idiots in stereo. They never go away. Typical Bikini Bottom day.
We now follow SpongeBob past the Tweedo. Home to Sandy Cheeks the Squirrel, hard at work on her latest invention.
Boy, howdy, that was close. It's just a little smoke, a minor setback. A few more hours at most, and I'll be done with this here brand new jetpack. And then this Texas squirrel, this country girl, will spread her wings and fly. Her bushy tail, a comet's trail, clear across the sky.
Above the town and looking down on a typical Bikini Bottom.
I'm off to work at the Krusty Krab.
Ah, yes. Bikini Bottom's most popular dining establishment. Home to the Krabby Patty. Owned and operated by Mr. Eugene Krabs. And across town, the least popular restaurant. The Chum Bucket. Run by Sheldon J. Plankton. Two arch-nemeses locked in a fast-food cold war.
Winds from the west, everywhere you look the skies are clear and sunny. Good weather's best when you're in the mood to make a ton of money.
Laugh while you can, until the day you laugh no more forever. I've got a plan, and I went to college, so you know it's clever.
They say that money doesn't matter if you love your work. Ha! Who would say that? Probably some penniless jerk.
Soon the day will come when they'll all love Chum. It's just a matter of time.
Bikini Bottom.
Till I get them in line.
Bikini Bottom.
And this town is all mine.
Just a typical Bikini Bottom day.
SpongeBob reporting for duty at the greatest restaurant in the entire ocean. Where's Mr. Krabs?
It's take your kid to work day.
Just think, Pearl, me darling daughter. One day this will all be yours. Soon as you graduate high school, I'll start you as manager.
But I have my own dreams, Daddy.
Mr. Krabs, if she doesn't want to be manager, I know someone who'd be great for the job.
You? My boy, you're just a wee simple sponge. A fry cook's all you'll ever be.
Why can't he see? I wore my good shoes and I've got my tie on. Maybe it's me. Am I just a simple sponge you can't rely on?
Come on, Mr. Krabs, I could do it if you'd give me one chance. Then everyone would say,
good morning, Mr. Squarepants.
I would never rest until I won the best.
SpongeBob, get in the kitchen. It's opening time.
You don't want the one about, like, burgers or anything?
No.
Okay.
Can I?
Yeah, you're on air.
Are you annoyed by all the loud airplane noise from flights departing Logan Airport these days? Our towns west of Boston are affected by the increased airplane noise due to the FAA's Highways in the Sky decision. This means that every single airplane departing from runway 33L on days with northwest winds continues on four narrow paths over the specific neighborhoods with near constant noise as a result. Boston West Fair Skies is trying to change this. For more information, including how to join the mailing list and file complaints with Massport and your elected officials, please visit bostonwestfairskies.org. A public service message from Boston West Fair Skies and WMFO in Medford, Tufts Community Radio.
That's a long one.
It was really long, and I also feel like I had to sign my name in blood at the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, I cold read all of those, and I'm generally happy with how I cold read them, but I'm also like, I could really throw some pizzazz in here if I want to. Here's a good BoJack Horseman quote. I haven't been this nervous since Diane was vacuuming during a thunderstorm on the 4th of July and I had to take a bath and there was a stranger in our yard. I love Mr. Peanut Butter.
Oh, Mr. Peanut Butter.
Yeah.
So, Zachary, are you...
Why is SpongeBob the perfect children's television character and a genuine positive role model for those children?
I was going to ask if you were excited about the Kentucky Derby, but sure.
No, I'm not excited about the Kentucky Derby.
That's silly. So you should be.
I don't care about horses, man. I just don't.
Horses, man.
Horses. SpongeBob SquarePants is never cynical. He's always enthusiastic. The first thing he says when he wakes up every day is... Well, it's good morning world and all who inhabit it, which is positive in its own right. But the thing he says when he gets out of his door is, I'm ready. I think that's beautiful.
It is
beautiful.
That's so positive.
I agree. I love it.
I'm a big fan of SpongeBob.
I used to understand the people who were like, SpongeBob's making your kids dumb. And I'm like, maybe new SpongeBob. But the first 3 to 4 seasons, great content. Positive content. I think I learned empathy through SpongeBob SquarePants.
Not through anything else in your life.
I don't know what else I could have learned empathy from.
I don't know. Your parents, Rugrats, your dog.
Yeah, sure. Rugrats? Rugrats is a very emotional show.
It is.
Yeah, that is true. I think SpongeBob. Numero uno.
I mean, that's numero fine. Uno. You're entitled to have that opinion. I love numero SpongeBob.
Uno. I'm not saying my parents didn't teach me empathy. My parents taught me empathy. But, like, SpongeBob too. Like, I think it was a great cartoon. Like, what other cartoons was I watching? They were probably, like, kind of... I mean, I was watching a lot of Power Rangers at the time, right? And that's, like, kind of violent and cynical.
Do you think Power Rangers is cynical?
I mean, in its like, I guess it's not cynical, but it is certainly, like... It doesn't go out of its way to try to make a positive message necessarily.
No.
It's very much like, we gotta go catch the monster, and the monster's gonna be stored in this little card forever.
That's like, true. It's much more soapy, I think, than anything else.
Yeah. Well, the things I love about Power Rangers are the soapy aspects
Me too.
Are just like, you know, 4 minutes an episode. Right?
Yeah.
At most.
But it felt so big at the time when you watched an episode of Power Rangers. Like, that episode of Time Force with the Pink Ranger's dead fiance, that really stuck with me into my adult life until I watched that episode recently, and then I was like, oh, this is like 2 seconds of a story and it's not very well done.
Yeah, it kind of, Power Rangers is one of those things that kind of sucks to go back to because it's just not as good
unless,
as you thought it was. Unless it's
Power Rangers 2017.
Oh, Power Rangers 2017 is great.
It's a great movie.
But that's also because it only plays on the emotional beats, which is awesome.
Yes.
But
we are the people, like, people who watch superhero movies, like, really hate, because we're like, I don't want any fighting. I want feelings.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite scene. So the reason that I think Avengers Age of Ultron is actually a really good movie is because of those personal moments, because they're so overplayed and, like, constant, and each character has one. There's one I was just thinking of. Like, or just the scene before, like, Ultron becomes a thing, where they're all, like, sitting around Avengers Tower, and they're, like, drinking together, and they're arguing over who can lift Thor's hammer.
Yeah.
Like, and, like, they just all have a contest to try to lift it, you know? And it's fun, and, like, Tony gets up there and, like, grabs it, and he's like, I shall rule Asgard, like, with a caring hand. Like, it's great.
I think it's why Superman is one of my favorite superheroes, because so much revolves around Superman just, like, with his family and his day job as Clark Kent. Like, it's the stuff how somebody that powerful can, like, move around in the world and still be, like, a regular, empathetic human and have relationships, I think, is more interesting to me than anything else. But maybe that's because I don't really care about fighting.
I mean, I like fighting when it exists in the movies, and I can watch it and I'm like, this is fun.
As a cathartic
But I don't
thing.
I don't want the fighting to be the movie.
Yes.
You know? Like the Spider-Man parts in Captain America Civil War are awesome because it's mostly just it's an experiment of this kid. That's why I actually think Tom Holland's a great Spider-Man, because it's a character we haven't really seen before, which is like the very, very self-conscious superhero who's not quite sure if he's doing anything right. You know, at least in any of these Marvel movies, I think that's what you find. But Superman, my favorite parts of any Superman movie, especially Superman Returns, are just the scenes where he's out saving people. And like there are two scenes in Superman Returns where that happens. There's the first one, which is like the plane that Lois is on, and he's like saving the plane because he's Superman, and that's like what Superman does, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or I think it's a space shuttle, but whatever.
No, it's a plane. When he lands it in the baseball field?
Yeah, the space shuttle's on top of the plane, and the idea is the space shuttle's going to launch off the plane because bad physics.
Right.
I like that. That's a great scene, because that's his, like, first appearance. And the other one is after Lex has started building that landmass outside of Metropolis Harbor, and the shockwave, like Superman's going out to the landmass to go, like, fight him, but he sees the shockwave go towards the city, and he just goes back, and it's just a montage of, like, him saving people in like five different scenes. And I just love that. That's the action I care about with Superman, is like just how he comes down and like saves people.
Right.
It's very godlike. I mean, that's the point though, right? Is unlike every other superhero, he can just kind of do it. And it's fun to watch someone who's good at something do something.
Yes. And I think people think that's boring. I think general consensus is among a lot of people who just don't get Superman is like, he can do anything. So what's the point? There's no challenge. But the challenge is, like, he can do anything.
Yeah. So where do you stop doing stuff?
Exactly.
Is the question. Which is sort of a question that movie answers a lot. Or plays with a lot, which I like. I love that movie. I think Superman Returns is a great movie.
I
think it's my favorite Superman movie.
More than the original Superman?
I like the original Superman up until the rooftop scene. And then after the rooftop scene, I think it just falls apart.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I like it because after the rooftop scene, it's just like him like
the rooftop scene with Lois Lane.
With Lois
Lane,
yeah.
I
think that's. I mean, that maybe that's just me having seen that movie so many times, but that's a pretty iconic scene, you know.
I mean, I suppose, but I think there are a lot of people who aren't Superman people anymore because of the horrible movies that came out.
Yeah, I'll defend the end of Man of Steel, sort of. I think the people who were like, Superman would never kill General Zod, I think that critique is a little simplistic.
Yeah.
I do like the critique that if he was going to kill General Zod, he would have done it before Metropolis got trashed and millions of people died.
Yeah, that's not very Superman.
Right? Like Superman, if Superman makes that moral decision, which like he would in that case, he wouldn't kill a human, but I feel like he would kill one of his own kind if he needed to. Is
because if he thought it was for the greater good, absolutely.
Yeah, because he's got like there is something paternalistic about Superman, right? And it's like to us, he can't control us because he knows that would be unjust, but he can force his will on someone who he views as his equal. Right, and I think another Kryptonian would be that. Right,
that makes sense to me. I think that's very accurate with Superman, the man I love.
Yeah, no, great superhero. But yeah, I like feelings in movies.
Feelings are great.
Feelings in superhero movies.
Not to bring up our parents every time I come on the show, but like we have the same parents, so it's really easy.
I bring them up.
Okay. Like how mom really loves Iron Fist because she thinks it's like a family drama.
I mean, it is.
Yeah.
It is in some ways.
Yeah, no, I love that. I don't know. That says something about us, I think.
Man, what's his name? The brother in that show who gets addicted to painkillers. I thought that show was all right. I didn't hate it that much.
I didn't watch it. I still have to finish the first season of Jessica Jones. I'm behind.
You haven't finished the first season of Jessica
Jones? I'm like one episode away.
I didn't watch the second season. I'm probably not gonna.
But she has the best name. Jessica, which is my name.
I think you mean Jewel is her superhero name.
You're mean.
Is her fake name. All right, we're gonna sign off in a minute so that I can play this Jack White song.
Okay.
You're listening to 91.5 WFO in Medford. This has been the Astro Hour. Thank you for tuning in for the past 2 hours. I'm Zach. This has been Jessica.
It has been.
Has been.
A has been.
I don't know what that means.
Like a has been.
Like a wannabe?
No, a wannabe is a wannabe. A has been is somebody who has been something but is now no longer something. Here's a song.
Bye-bye. Tune in 2 weeks from now for me. Tune in next week for Chris. And tune in like 6 minutes for Haley. Hopefully she's made some headway on that essay. We'll see. We'll see, won't we? And bye-bye. We'll be right back.